On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Lydia Wilson, Signature Consultants EVP of Strategy and Development. Leslie and Lydia discuss how she was inspired by female leaders early in her staffing career, her competitive personality, and why she believes you have to be excellent in everything you do. Lydia's upbeat and inspiring spirit resonates throughout the episode as she shares personal stories, advice, and industry insights.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery, CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and it is my absolute pleasure to welcome Lydia Wilson to the Edge Podcast. Lydia is currently the Executive Vice President of Strategy and Development at Signature Consultants, where she's been the past 10 months. Lydia spent the first 15 years of her career in staffing with Adecco. She then headed over to Remedy, then Workforce Logic, and after being away from Adecco for 13 years, actually got called back as an executive vice president for their MSP and RPO division, Pontoon. Lydia, welcome to the Edge Podcast.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be here. Looking forward to the conversation.
Great. Well, thank you again for joining us. And before we dive into your current role with Signature, I actually want to talk a little bit about how you got into staffing. So when we first connected and you were sharing with me your background, you mentioned that you grew up being very competitive. You were the middle child between your two brothers and always playing sports, in particular track and volleyball. And if memory serves me correctly, you actually answered an ad and started at Adecco as a recruiter when they were $500 million in revenue, which I can't even believe, because then while you were there, they hit $28 billion during your tenure. That is such a huge jump, $500 million to $28 billion. Talk about significant growth. So I can only imagine how your competitive spirit played a huge role in your success. It's definitely a trait that works very well in our industry. And I'd love to hear from you, because we're often looking at kind of college recruiting and bringing in that next generation of staffing talent. What were your first impressions about the industry when you got started? And then perhaps share a couple of career highlights that really stand out to you, kind of moments in your career that you believe led to where you are today.
Yeah, sure. You're right. I did answer an ad, which ages me right there, right? It was a print ad for All Things Considered. But my first impressions of the industry was I loved it. I loved the pace. I loved the deadlines. I loved everything about it. But I didn't really have any business acumen. I was newly married. I hadn't even been married 6 months. So I was kind of motivated to make some money. And I was motivated to get my life and my career started. So I looked at it and I jumped into it, you know, feet first, and went for it. The other thing that I remember when you said, you know, what do I think about? I was enamored by the smart women. There were a lot of women in the industry, and I had always been around male entrepreneurs growing up. So I'd seen a lot of men do some amazing, wonderful things, but I hadn't been around a lot of kind of smart driving women. So that made me curious. I wanted to learn. I can honestly say it wasn't deliberate how I was going about it, but I enjoyed the learning, and the learning led to new opportunities. You asked me a little bit about significant things or things that were impactful. You know, if I think about that for a second, I remember, you know, the first big account that I won and how that gave me confidence to pursue other things. I was, you know, we talked about me being competitive. I was teaching aerobics on the side, and I'd been teaching aerobics class for about a year. And I was trying to get into business at Time Life Books, and I'd been calling on Time Life Books for about a year. And in the back of my aerobics class, unbeknownst to me, was the head of HR of Time Life Books, and I'd been teaching him aerobics class for a year. And he finally said, "What do you do, you know, outside of this?" And I said, I work in a staffing company, and I was really proud of the staffing company. And the next day, the lady that I was calling on for a year called me and said, "Tony said, if you run your business anything like you teach your aerobics classes, then we should do business together." So off and running I went, and I learned that you never know where the business is going to come from, and you never know what excellence looks like. You got to be excellent every day in everything you do. So that was kind of the start for me.
That's so true. You just never know who's in the room with you when you're doing something. But I love that story, teaching aerobics, and they happen to be in the class. So you had a little side gig, quote unquote, as you started in staffing, which is great because, again, as you look at the evolution of our industry, it's something that really hasn't changed, right? That's something that people have done a long time. Are you still teaching aerobics?
No, I'm not doing aerobics. There are no more side gigs, but I do have to say this. I was in an office the other day, and I'm 57 years old, so let's get that out there first. And I was in an office, and somebody did really something amazing, and I looked down this hallway, and I said, "Oh my God, that's cartwheel worthy!" And they all turned around and looked at me, and I did a cartwheel. And that was like, you would have thought that like the whole, they all stood up, they clapped, they laughed. They were like, "I can't believe you just did that." I was like, "I can't believe I just did it." But it was bloody fun. So next time somebody does something, I think I'll go cartwheel worthy. So no aerobics, but I have to go cartwheel. Yeah, exactly.
Well, I was going to say we'd be recruiting you to lead us in a class at the next conference so a bunch of us could get together. That said, if I did a cartwheel today, I'm not even sure what would pull, but I'm confident something would. But again, things that you mentioned, so the traits, the pace, that's something that is so critical in our industry. So as we look at, again, recruiting college students and kind of that passion and love that you brought to the table when you first started, it's something that transcends today. So the ad could have been paper, print, or digital, who knows? You know, it's that one first step and that feeling that you get when coming into it that I know a lot of us share with you. So Lydia, when we first chatted, you were talking about the opportunity with Signature and a few things were really intriguing. So when they presented the opportunity to you, first, you'd be the very first outside hire to the executive team as they always have promoted from within. And second, you'd be the first female on the executive team. Third, it's basically it's essentially a position they custom made for you. And finally, while you've been used in your career to kind of coming in and fixing something that's broken, you were brought in to enhance what was already there. So work with that foundation, but really scale it to new levels, which of course you bring significant background in doing, having spent the bulk of your career at, you know, large global organizations. So with all of those things being said, I was very intrigued when you told me that background. What was it about that opportunity? Because some people would have run from that. What was it to you that made you say yes? And I guess before you answer that question, I always assume everyone knows Signature because I've known the company and Jay and Mark and several of the executives in there for many years being in the industry. Maybe a quick overview of the company would be great as you start to tell your story.
Yeah, sure. So from who is Signature perspective, it's a national privately held staffing company. So founded in 97, focused on IT, but also in accounting and finance. So started literally, 23 years ago, $0. Now revenue, $425 million. And 3,500 consultants out and working, 27 locations. And I think probably one of the things most proud of is 9 years running on the great places to work. So the environment and the culture is key to the organization. But it's funny, we talked this last month about it took the organization 15 years, maybe 16 years to get to 150 million. And the organization grew 150 million in the last 18 months. So significant growth set up in a way to continue to grow. So that's just a little bit about who Signature is today. Certainly just a post-it version of it. You know, you asked why Signature and why did I look at the opportunity? I didn't really look at the opportunity first. As a matter of fact, Jay Cohen is the founder and leader of the organization. And I happen to know him in my past life and knew him for about 5 years. And we would talk a lot, but it was more about just business and sharing information on both sides. And he came and asked me, you know, if I'd be interested in would I ever consider Signature. And it was funny because I laughed. Because I hadn't even considered it, right? I hadn't even thought about it. I hadn't even looked at it. And we agreed to get together and have a conversation about it. And 48 hours later, we shook on it, which tells you a little bit about him probably and a lot about me that I haven't shook on anything in about 25 years. So it was interesting that that's how we started it. But it was about Jay. It was about the leadership team. It was about the culture. It was about making a difference and helping a group of people that were on this really cool journey and having, you know, being grateful enough to be part of that journey. And I couldn't have made a better choice. At this point in my life and this point in my career, it's been an incredible transition. I'm excited about it.
It is a phenomenal company with such a unique culture, and it's really hard to describe until you've kind of had a taste of it. And those who know Jay are very fortunate to know him because he's such a giving person. And just so kind to those who he knows and who he works with. And one of the things that was extraordinarily different and unique was really your first 90 days. So I kind of want to ask you to paint a picture of that. It's truly fascinating, something that is unique, especially kind of goes counterintuitive to our DNA, so to speak, where you want to really run quickly and it's almost that slow down to speed up. But one of the many things I admire about the way Signature operates and how it plays into the secret sauce, so to speak, of the Signature way is how they first onboarded you. So perhaps you can share a little bit about what that looked like.
Yeah, sure. You are absolutely right. It is the most unique onboarding experience I've ever had. I came into the organization and they asked me to observe, which I understood. And so I'm thinking a week or two that I'm going to observe. And I got told that I was not only going to observe for a week or two, I was going to observe for several months. Several months turned into close to 5 months. And when it first started, I didn't know what to do with it. I'm not used to observing and not giving an opinion or not giving some type of input. And I didn't know what to do with it. So I started my own kind of online journal, if you will, about my observations and what I thought I would do and how I would do it and what I would change, because I couldn't do anything with it. I couldn't put it anywhere. And it's interesting, after that time kind of came to a close and I reflected, it was truly a gift to be able to look and observe and learn who a company is from the inside out, and not listening to respond, but listening to learn, was fascinating for me. And understanding the why and understanding what it really means in the organization to do no harm, to put friends first. I mean, it was a gift and I will be forever grateful for that gift.
Now that you've experienced it this way, can you imagine doing it any other way?
No, I can't. And the real interesting thing is moving forward, how do I give that gift to somebody else? How do I incorporate that in for somebody else? Because the gift was really to myself. I really thought that I was there to help the organization make, you know, the best decision in the shortest amount of time and have an ROI that was going to be and bring value, all of those things, right? When in reality, the gift was for myself. I believe that I am better for it. I am a better listener because of it. I've slowed down and been very deliberate. And I'm going to allow the same thing for the people that I onboard myself, right? It may not be as long. Let's be honest. The scope of the role would be different. But I think that's a gift we all should give one another, is to be able to listen and learn in an environment that's truly about growth and development.
So often I think we are trying to prove ourselves early and come in and you see things that just seem like low-hanging fruit, kind of quick fixes. But to your point, as you get to know the company and the organization, some of the things that you would have thought would have been a really good suggestion just wouldn't have worked at all. It is a gift that, you know, with you sharing with me a story and talking to Spark Nussbaum about it a bit, I definitely will be looking at ways to implement that. And I can tell already just from interview, I'm interviewing a senior candidate right now, and I can tell they're, you know, asking questions about things that we already have, but thinking that there'll be easy things that they could come in and do. So giving them that opportunity, that gift to take the time to really learn and engage and listen will make them so much more successful when they come on. So I appreciate you sharing that gift because it's definitely something that we'll be putting into place here at ClearEdge.
The gift for me was actually that people were, they were getting to know me in a very different way. They were getting to know me personally and they weren't just getting to know my background. And so when they got to know me personally, they were more willing to listen to my ideas and they were more willing to engage with me. And I didn't realize that that was going to be some of the output from it, which has really helped now when I am looking to push some initiatives forward or I'm looking to make some changes. People are bought in and they're bought in quicker and I'm not finding any kind of resistance. They've jumped on the wagon and we're off and running. So kudos to Jay and to Mark, who I'm teaming up with here, that there's a brilliance there. And they saw that and I didn't see that. So I'm grateful for that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, you were the first executive outside person they brought in. to the executive team, having that time to kind of earn the trust and have the trust from everyone before, you know, coming in with ideas and decisions, not at the executive level, they obviously have that trust, but throughout the company, that makes a lot of sense. So thank you again for sharing that. And I'm sure many people on the line, you know, you struggle because you want to jump in and say things and, you know, make recommendations. And there's always a time and place for that for the right moment. But for something like this, onboarding for such a critical role, this is just, it's a brilliant idea. Part of your role, speaking of that, is to help the company achieve its aggressive growth goals over the next 5 years. So amazing growth, just you had mentioned, I think it was 150 million in a certain amount of time, and then cutting that down to what, 1 year, 2 years, another 150 million. That's unbelievable growth goals. There are companies that are trying to go from 25 million to 50 million, 75 to 100 million, and then make that big jump like you all, the 250 to 500, and then the 500 to a billion. Perhaps share based on your own experience when you see companies struggle to scale, why you believe your background sets you up for success in a role like the one you're in now.
My background, at least in this scenario, it gives me the luxury of being there before. So I feel like I've read the book, right? And I'm reading the book for the second time. So that's the first thing. The second thing, though, is that I also understand that even though I've done it before, I haven't done it at Signature. And this was a bit of an aha for me when I was looking at this and I had this time of reflection. I thought I would have made different decisions in a different organization. I would have looked at things a little bit differently. But in the organization that I'm in now, this is what needs to be first, or this is what I would prioritize differently. And this is why I would do it differently, right? There's a word, you know, there's a phrase, a two-word phrase, talk, you know, Mark J. and I talk about at times about deliberate speed, right? You go as fast as you can to be deliberate. And that has shifted for me here, right? Because often in a publicly traded company, right, you're looking at a quarter by quarter and you're making decisions quarter by quarter, right? The decisions here are much longer term play. But I think one of the things that is universal in all of those, right, is that you need talent. It's very important to groom that talent. It's very important to invest in that talent. And the qualities of discipline, accountability, empathy, compassion, those are all still there, regardless of the organization and regardless of the size. Right. So when you invest in that talent and you're mentoring those types of qualities, the growth can be exponential. And that's why I was so excited to join the organization, because culturally, that's where the focus is.
Well, and realizing too, as a company, when you think about those that, you know, the 25 million to 50 million, and then having a vision of one day getting to 500 million or a billion, a lot of times the founders haven't done that before. And the people with them have kind of grown up with them in the company. And they don't always know what they don't know, per se. And bringing in someone who has done that and has been able to scale, to your point, is smart. It takes a lot of realization and being very humble to realize that that's something that you may need and could be missing. And then to your point, if you're that person looking to be in a similar role as Lydia, know that it's not always the same. Just because you did it at one place definitely means you can obviously be successful, but it's going to be different because the culture is different, the company is different, the team who you have and the talent is different. So that makes a lot of sense. One of the things I love about hosting this podcast, Lydia, is that I get to meet many of the women who have helped grow our industry, giving them, people like you, a voice to share your stories. You were named to the SIA Global Power Women in Staffing list. You're really a recognized leader in our industry and admired by many. And I can say that because I did ask a couple of people after Mark Nussbaum, who is with Signature, we've talked about a little bit, first mentioned your name. And I looked you up and realized, my gosh, we knew a lot of the same people, but didn't know each other. And I kept hearing like, oh my gosh, you've never met Lydia before. How can that be? You know, she's phenomenal. You're going to love working with her. So I hear all of these wonderful things. And fast forward several months later, I got to officially meet you in person during the most recent TechServe Alliance annual women's luncheon that ClearEdge sponsors. We've sponsored, I guess, now for the past 10 years. And it was really nice to meet you at the event. It was great to see you at a table with women from Signature, who came with you. And I believe we had around 80 women in attendance for the luncheon, which was a really nice turnout. One thing I can say about the luncheon is people are very open and very candid and feel very comfortable sharing stories. So you got to experience that for the first time this past year when you attended. So listening to all of the stories shared, what did you walk away thinking as far as how far we've come over the years, or even maybe how far we have yet to go to achieve diversity in our own industry? And to kind of add on to that, I guess, what is your mission as it relates? Because it was, again, really nice to see you sitting there with kind of other women and some up-and-comers in your company. What is your mission as it relates to this topic? You know, being the first woman to your executive team, how do you believe you can make a difference at Signature? And then really, you have an opportunity based on who you are and your role and your background really to make a difference at the industry at large. So it's a two-part question. I realize it's a little loaded, but what did you walk away thinking as far as how far we've come or what we have to do, and what do you think you can do to kind of make a difference as it relates to diversity?
Yeah, it's funny, you know, you say that and I just want to pause, right? I want to take that all in because it is impactful. So first, I want to say thank you for hosting the lunch. I didn't know what to expect, right? I've been to a lot of lunches, been to a lot of events, but I don't often cry. And I happened to be sitting next to a young woman who shared a story about domestic violence. I heard women talk about their own struggles, right? Their own struggles within their roles in the industry, their roles to push forward. And it was very inspiring, right? To listen to their journeys and to listen how they push through and press, right? And I left thinking we've made so many significant strides, but we still have so far to go, right? So when I think about, you know, all the numbers we know, right, 5% of the women lead Fortune 500 companies, women make 79 cents on the dollar, you know, for men, and all of those things we continue to hear, and we feel like we're making a dent, but then, you know, we go another 4 or 5 years and it's still the same. So I recently read an article in Harvard Business Review, and it was talking about the fact that women score higher on leadership qualities than men, yet they still don't hold the roles. And, you know this from talking to me, Leslie, this was fascinating to me because a lot of this stemmed from confidence. And they said the confidence was much greater in men under 25 than women. But weirdly, the research is showing is that that's merging at age 40 and they're equal confidence. And then at age 60, it's a little bit hockey stick up for women and it's decreasing for men. So, you know, I look at that and it gives me hope where I'm thinking, okay, we are making shifts. We are doing the right things. There's things that are impactful, but one of those to me for sure is giving women, you know, people of color a voice and supporting that and an edge and confidence to be able to move forward the way they've always wanted to move forward. And I feel that that I can pay that forward, right? So that's how I see my role is being able to pay that forward.
You're fortunate to be in a role where people can learn from you and look up to you. And quite frankly, you know, when we think about looking back at who were some of the mentors or who were some of the people who we got to know over the years in the industry and the women who were there and kind of helped push us through different situations and scenarios, you're fortunate to be in a position where you can be that person for many people. And again, not just at Signature, but across the industry, just by showing up, you know, going to the conferences, going to the lunches, providing your voice on this podcast, you know, just showing up is half the battle, and being part of that really can make a big difference. And something you mentioned, confidence, it's something you and I have very similar in common. And it was so interesting when you said this when we were prepping, because I'm pretty sure I say this at almost every single event that I'm speaking at on this topic, where the biggest gift your parents can give you is the gift of confidence. And Lydia, you're fortunate you carry that gift into everything you do, every role, every mission you have. And I'm really curious, because you're a mom of two daughters, that gift that parents can give, how did you intentionally give them that gift? And if you were to ask them, what would they say about the gift of confidence and then for themselves paying it forward into others' lives as well?
It's interesting. I am a mother of two adult women, and what I know is really my own experience, right? So it was mirrored for me. I have an incredibly strong mother who didn't see roles based on gender, right? So that was what I grew up in, and I mirrored it for my girl. And in the situation that I'm in, we made a decision that my husband stayed home. So I performed kind of a non-traditional duties, which even seems funny that we're still saying stuff like that, but so did my husband. So when you look at how did we do it and how do I try to do it right, we encouraged activities that they were passionate about regardless of gender norm. And we praised them for the accomplishments. And I was very deliberate about this, and I still am. We praise them for their accomplishments and not their looks and not their outfit. I look at this all the time, and I look at when we say to women, you look beautiful, you look wonderful, you look great. And we say to men, you're smart, you're, God, that was so great, your achievements are so good. And, you know, we don't do it purposely, but we're sending very different messages. So the message that I wanted to send was, you know, work hard, win graciously, learn from your losses, and you can do whatever you want to do. So we did that with our own two girls. That was done for me. And hopefully I'm doing that in the workplace for men, women, whoever, right? It isn't about your gender. It's not, or the gender you identify with. It's not about your age. It's not about any of those things. It's about what you want to do and how you do it and what you bring into the world and into the workplace.
So usually talking on this topic of diversity and inclusion during events, I'm often approached by men in the audience, even more so than women. And to your point, everyone struggles with confidence. They really do. I just happen to be around, you know, having co-founded ARA, which was Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Tech. We have about 6,000 men and women as part of the program. And confidence always comes up as kind of the number one thing men hope for women and that women hope for women to have. So I often get men coming up to me and asking about their role and how they can instill confidence in their daughters. And, you know, fathers are often their very first role model in their life. And you answered this a little bit, and I'm going to ask it again, see if there's anything different or unique from your husband's point of view. So when you look at your husband, who played such a strong role for your girls, what advice would you have for men when they ask that question, what they can do?
Choose your words wisely. I listened to all the biases over the years about, you know, what behavior should look like for girls and what behavior should look like for boys and the expectation of those things. And be aware of gender norm. I have this conversation all the time with my male counterparts when I watch them, oh, my wife does this with my daughter and I do this with my son. Or, you know, we go and do this. I can't cook worth a dang, but I can change a tire on a car. You know, I don't know how to do kind of what was stereotypical, you know, traditional things that moms, you know, taught daughters. I don't go to the grocery store. I don't know the dry cleaners. I don't do any of those things, right? And so my girls didn't see that path, but I don't want, you know, when I look at things, it's like, don't look at boys and say, be tough, don't cry. Don't look at it on either side. You know, when you're looking at girls, celebrate their sass, their confidence, their aggressiveness, right? Don't be surprised when they show up and they're the most determined, tough, strong-willed people that you know. Don't discourage non-traditional forms of behavior. Celebrate them. So that's the advice that I give men, right, is choose your words wisely and be aware that they have consequences and your daughters and your sons are watching.
And sadly, as we both know, a lot of times those words, even when not meant fully as deeply as you may think that they are when they're heard and absorbed in a way that can really frame a lifetime of confidence issues that people need to get over. So it really is important to think about that. And that's usually what we find is that it stems from something in childhood that was said that maybe even the parents don't even remember saying, but something being said. So it starts at home. And I love that. Choose your words wisely. So something, Lydia, that we actually talked about kind of related to this topic in our industry is that for a lot of people, they didn't see their moms working. You and I, you know, regardless of your backgrounds and everything else, a lot of people did not. So it's hard to imagine what you can be if you don't see it. Then when you get into a company that's primarily male dominated, you naturally don't work with a lot of, you know, working moms. So it's hard to relate when you don't have anyone to lean on for support or mentoring. That said, for you, and you talked a little bit about this with your husband, you loved going to work. You loved going home. You felt like you could successfully pull off being present at both, which a lot of people unfortunately struggle with. And you're very fortunate that you were in a situation where you could, and that you could do whatever you knew. You could do whatever you wanted to do. And again, a lot of that I'm sure is instilled in your upbringing. And your husband, on the other hand, he didn't love what he did. And you made a decision as a family for him to stay home that was over 28 years ago. Now, I have to say, while not as common and not as discussed as much with stay-at-home dads, I have to share that I would say the majority of our podcast guests have that same family setup with stay-at-home dads, and they just don't talk about it a lot. Now, the world has clearly changed over the past several years, but what else can we do as an industry? We're employers, right? We're helping talent and companies with their talent. So being in the position that we're in, we have a significant opportunity here to modify the norm, address our biases, and move that needle of diversity, inclusion, and acceptance. So maybe you can share a story about your own situation that would help others as they consider what's right for their own families.
Yeah, first I would say kudos to you and thank you for having the platform, right? I think the first thing we need to do is we need to talk about it, right? We're not going to move the needle unless we do talk about it. So once you start talking about it, right, and you start that discussion, have it everywhere you go and don't stop. So the more people we bring into the fold, the more conversations we can have, the better off we are all for it. But as important as it is to have the conversation, it's important to listen. And I learned this a little bit hard, kind of on my own side of not listening and being, I can be a tad bit aggressive and a tad bit determined, right? But, you know, and what I mean by that is you need to challenge your own ideas and your own perception, and you need to be more inclusive. I remember I'm not a tattoo lover. I don't know if that's generational or that's personal, but I just haven't been a person who gets the tattoo thing. And my daughter, I was walking down the street and I made a comment about somebody with tattoos. I think I said something like, God, I just don't get it. And she stopped. She stopped me right in the middle of the street and she said, what is it that you don't get? And I said, I don't like it. And she said, Mom, you don't care what's on the outside. You care what's on the inside. So if you care what's on the inside, don't judge the person on what's on the outside. And she said, just look at them and say, you do you. And if they're good, then they're good. And I was like, bam, I needed it. And guess what? Every time I see somebody covered with tattoos now, I laugh and I go, you do you, sister. And I hope I like what's in your inside, because what's on your outside doesn't matter to me. So this idea of learning and evolving and making our circle bigger and more inclusive means accepting people who look and think differently than we do. And even when I think I'm fairly forward thinking in this way, I need to challenge it. You know, and I'm certainly in the middle of working with a group of people and formalizing the diversity, equity, inclusion movement within Signature. And I'm really excited about that because it started with, you know, how can we move and how can we make it more powerful for women? And it was like, how do we make it more powerful for everybody? How do we be more inclusive? How do we lead and not follow? I don't know if that's exactly what you were asking me, but hopefully that answers a little bit about where my thought process is there.
It does. I think that for me, one of the things that you said is, which is something that I firmly believe as well, is what's right for me isn't necessarily right for everyone else, and that they need to do what's best for themselves and their families, regardless of the situation. And that we don't know what's happening, to your daughter's point, like each person is their individual selves, and we need to respect what it is that they're doing and appreciate that. And you know, the biases will be there, and it's just working on, and to your point, you know, listening, slowing down, really choosing your words wisely and challenging the way that you think is really critical. But I know from my own experiences that what I have done in my life with my career, with my relationship, with having children, all of those things are very different from what other people may do. And I'm okay with that. Yeah. And then when people get to know you and understand it, they're okay with it too. Because to your point, it's what's on the inside that matters most. So.
Yeah. And I think you're also hitting on it, you know, with a little bit of, you would ask me, and I don't think I really answered it, just kind of the choice, some of the choices that I made, right? My husband and I made choices that worked for us and worked for our nucleus, but that doesn't mean they would work for everybody. And that's okay, right? That is absolutely okay. I think probably one of the most difficult things that we made the decision on is that he had a job and I had a career. And when we made the decision that somebody was going to stay home, I really thought before we had kids, it was going to be me, and it wasn't. And I egomaniacally thought I'd be better at it, and I wasn't, right? He was better at it. He had more rules. He had more structure. He had more things. I was more innovative, more creative, more visionary. And the combination of those two worked better for us, but he was much better at it, you know? And recognizing that not only in your own family, but outside your family and in the workplace and in the world is an important thing, right? It's a very important thing. And that kind of, you know, 34 years later, you know, he and I are still doing that, which is a really cool thing.
I love it. And then, like you said, the more we talk about it, the more it can become the norm and accepted as it should be. But you mentioned, speaking of your daughters a lot on this, you know, one of your daughters giving you the biggest compliment that she didn't really realize what you did until she got in the job market, commenting how you really didn't miss anything that was big. You were always there for them. It reminded me actually of an interview I did with Ursula Williams' daughter, Dana. And Ursula, for those of you listening, with Staffing Industry Analyst, and her daughter, I had her on our podcast. And then I thought, gosh, it'd be great to kind of understand from the daughter's perspective what it was like from the lens of the daughter. I asked Dana's opinion about what it would be like to be a working mom from the daughter's view. And one of my favorite lines that Dana shared was, be a working woman and be it unapologetically. Maybe you can't be at every PTA meeting or every after-school pickup with the other moms, and that's okay. You are pursuing your passions and making an impact. This is more meaningful than the after-school 10-minute car ride home together would be, despite how it may feel for you to not be there. So how did you manage to be a working woman and be it unapologetically? Did you ever face a situation where it was just too much, that you couldn't do both? You felt like you couldn't? And did it take you time to get there? I guess, what other advice do you have for those kind of striving for the same thing?
I'm laughing because I know Ursula. And so I know her daughter. So I'm just kind of laughing because that totally sounds like them. And I couldn't agree more. I guess my first thing is, I don't know if I'd ever apologize for doing what I love and sharing that passion for life with my family, my daughters, and those people around me. I would take the approach that I'm the best person I can be when I'm doing that kind of thing, right? But I could also say that I totally respect the passion that somebody, that a woman has or a man has, to stay home full time with their children. I look at it and go, right on, do what makes you happy and do what's best for your family. For me, what it was, I love the work that I do. And I think that I'm better because of it. Now, does that mean that I, you know, it's sunshine and rainbows every day? No. I mean, I can tell you about the red eye flights that I take to be, you know, in a meeting in New York and then fly back to see a soccer match in San Francisco, right? The many nights where you stop work and you're working till 2 a.m. because you want to have dinner with your family, or you want to see a play, or you want to do a recital. I think probably the difference for me is that that's an overabundance of joy for me. So when I'm in it, it seems over the top, but I wouldn't want it any other way. And you've got to gauge that for yourself, right? You've got to be able to stand up and go, you know what? I got to pull back. I've got to slow down, right? Or the teeter-totter's got to balance a little bit more in my family direction than in my work direction. And how I did that was really through, it just makes me laugh, with my husband, because there is, every once in a while, he will look at me and just literally look at me square in the eyes and say, you're over the top. Like, everything is running full burners and you need to pull back. Well, my self-talk, I can't say on the air, which is what I'm thinking I want to say to him, which we laugh about and talk about later. But the reality is, he loves me enough to tell me, you got to put it in balance. And I love him enough that he wouldn't tell me that unless he loved me. And usually I am over the top. And usually I do need to get a little more sleep and a little more exercise and a little more self-care. You know, I don't feel the guilt, but I have felt the guilt, but I don't feel it for any length of time. And I would tell any man, woman, don't apologize for what you want. Go after it and surround yourself with people who support that and who challenge you to be better.
Surround yourself with people who support that and challenge you to be better. That's so important, because if you don't have that support system, it makes it really difficult. And that was something actually that Dana mentioned as well, was the love between her parents and the partnership that they had really helped make it work. So I'm happy to hear you have that as well, and that he is very open with you. And I have that thing, and it really makes it a lot better. Okay, last question for you, Lydia. What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Oh, sister, that's a big question.
I know.
Okay. I am all about getting advice and all about kind of weaving that advice into my life. And it's very different on very different stages of my life. So when I think about that, I think probably I can't put it into one. Let me just give you two or three here. So let me think about this. So the first one would be follow your passion and the rest will follow. So every time I've done that, whether that's been personally, professionally, how I work, how I live, how I travel, everything's come in place. Whether that's where I live, whether it's a job I take, whether it's how I lead, whether it's how, you know, I interact with my immediate family, my extended family. If I follow my passion and I have pure joy, the rest of it follows for me. But on another note, something that I live by pretty strongly is don't ever back down defending what's right. And for me, that has come up in work. That has come up in life, that's come up in negotiations. There are some times when I just feel my 2 feet just go firmly into the ground. And it's really funny. I'm talking right now with my fist clenched and I feel it. And I feel so strongly about it.
Right? I can feel it.
Stand up. Yeah. I can just stand up and I know when it's coming, right? It's like an injustice, or I just can't handle it. And I go there. And this kind of is a different side of my personality, right? And then the third one I probably is, this came to me in high school, and it was a high school English teacher, and it really means something different now. It was look it up. There's no excuse for ignorance. So when I'm writing something or when I'm thinking about something, and it's very different now, you know, you can look up anything online, but I'm fascinated by how many people don't, right? And I'm fascinated about how much we can learn and how much we can explore. But it started with me and just learning how to spell something, or learning and using a word that was the appropriate word and being afraid to use it because I didn't know the definition. But it's morphed into something so much bigger for me. And, you know, curiosity and education and learning and keep pushing that. So sorry, those are, I kind of cheated on your not one, but those are kind of the three things. So if you allow me to cheat, there I go.
No need to apologize. Remember, we're in this together. So fantastic advice, Lydia. Thank you so much. The entire podcast has been very insightful. I continue to learn so much about you, going all the way back to the beginning with your aerobics background and how you were so passionate going into the industry, and just the competitive nature and spirit of you, and how you are going to help Signature, and how you're going to help, really, again, to your point, not just women in the industry, but thinking about the entire picture as it relates to D&I initiatives. I'm so thankful to have met you and to have had you on our podcast. Thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much. And I appreciate the conversation, and I appreciate what you're doing on behalf of women and the platform, and on behalf of so many people. It's a privilege to pay it forward, and it's a privilege to have a conversation with you here today. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest, or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.